Chapter 111. New voices in the waves. All is going on as it was wont. The waves are hoarse with repetition of their mystery. The dust lies piled upon the shore. The seabirds soar and hover. The winds and clouds go forth upon their trackless flight. The white arms beckon, in the moonlight, to the invisible country far away. With a tender melancholy pleasure, Florence finds herself again on the old ground so sadly trodden, yet so happily, and thinks of him in the quiet place, where he and she have many and many a time conversed together, with the water welling up about his couch. And now, as she sits pensive there, she hears in the wild low murmur of the sea, his little story told again, his very words repeated, and finds that all her life and hopes, and griefs, since in the solitary house, and in the pageant it has changed to have a portion in the burden of the marvelous song. And gentle Mr. Toots, who wanders at a distance, looking wistfully towards the figure that he dotes upon, and has followed there, but cannot in his delicacy disturb at such a time, likewise hears the requiem of little Dom beyond the waters, rising, and falling in the lulls of their eternal madrigal in praise of Florence. Yes, and he faintly understands, poor Mr. Toots, that they are saying something of a time when he was sensible of being brighter and not addle-brained, and the tears rising in his eyes when he fears that he is dull and stupid now, and good for little, but to be laughed at, diminish his satisfaction in their soothing reminder that he is relieved from present responsibility to the chicken, by the absence of that game head of poultry in the country, training at Toots cost for his great meal with the larky boy. But Mr. Toots takes courage when they whisper a kind thought to him, and by slow degrees, and with many indecisive stoppages on the way, approaches Florence. Stammering and blushing, Mr. Toots affects amazement when he comes near her, and says, having followed close on the carriage in which he travelled, every inch of the way from London, loving even to be choked by the dust of its wheels, that he never was so surprised in all his life. And you've brought Diogenes to Miss Dombey. Says Mr. Toots, thrilled through and through by the touch of the small hand so pleasantly and frankly given him. No doubt Diogenes is there, and no doubt Mr. Toots has reason to observe him, for he comes straightway at Mr. Toots' legs, and tumbles over himself in the desperation with which he makes at him, like a very dog of Montargis. But he is checked by his sweet mistress. Down, Di, down. Don't you remember who first made us friends, Di? For shame. Oh. Well may Di lay his loving cheek against her hand, and run off, and run back, and run round her, barking, and run headlong at anybody coming by, to show his devotion. Mr. Toots would run headlong at anybody too. A military gentleman goes past, and Mr. Toots would like nothing better than to run at him, full tilt. Diogenes is quite in his native air, isn't he, Miss Dombey? Says Mr. Toots. Florence assents, with a grateful smile. Miss Dombey, says Mr. Toots, beg your pardon, but if you would like to walk to Blimmer's, I'm going there. Florence puts her arm in that of Mr. Toots without a word, and they walk away together, with Diogenes going on before. Mr. Toots' legs shake under him, and though he is splendidly dressed, he feels misfits, and sees wrinkles, in the masterpieces of Burgess and Company, and wishes he had put on that brightest pair of boots. Dr. Blimmer's house, outside, has as scholastic and studious an air as ever, and up there is the window, where she used to look for the pale face, and where the pale face brightened when it saw her, and the wasted little hand waved kisses as she passed. The door is opened by the same weak-eyed young man, whose imbecility of grin at sight of Mr. Toots is feebleness of character personified. They are shown into the doctor's study, where blind Homer and Minerva give them audience as of yore, to the sober ticking of the great clock in the hall, and where the globe stands still in their accustomed places, as if the world were stationary too, and nothing in it ever perished in obedience to the universal law, that, while it keeps it on the roll, calls everything to earth. And here is Dr. Blimmer, with his learned legs, and here is Mrs. Blimmer, with her sky-blue cap, and here Cornelia, with her sandy little row of curls, and her bright spectacles, still working like a sexton in the graves of languages. Here is the table upon which he sat forlorn and strange, the new boy of the school, and hither comes the distant cooing of the old boys, at their old lives, in the old room on the old principle. Toots, apostrophe, says Dr. Blimmer, I am very glad to see you, Toots. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots chuckles in reply. Also to see you, Toots, in such good company, apostrophe, says Dr. Blimmer. Mr. Toots, with a scarlet visage, explains that he has met Miss Dombey by accident, and that Miss Dombey wishing, like himself, to see the old place, they have come together. You will like, apostrophe, says Dr. Blimmer, to step among our young friends, Miss Dombey, no doubt. All fellow students of yours, Toots, once. I think we have no new disciples in our little portico, my dear, apostrophe, says Dr. Blimmer to Cornelia, since Mr. Toots left us. Apostrophe, except Bitherstone, apostrophe, returns Cornelia. Eh, truly, apostrophe, says the doctor. Bitherstone is new to Mr. Toots. Apostrophe, new to Florence too, almost. For, in the schoolroom, Bitherstone no longer Master Bitherstone of Mrs. Pipchin's shows in collars and a neckcloth, and wears a watch. But Bitherstone, born beneath some Bengal star of ill omen, is extremely inky, and his lexicon has got so dropsical from constant reference, that it won't shut, and yawns as if it really could not bear to be so bothered. So does Bitherstone its master, forced at Dr. Blimmer's highest pressure. But in the yawn of Bitherstone there is malice and snarl, and he has been heard to say that he wishes he could catch old Blimmer in India. He'd precious soon find himself carried up the country by a few of his Bitherstones, coolies, and handed over to the thugs. He can tell him that. Briggs is still grinding in the mill of knowledge, and Tozer too, and Johnson too, and all the rest, the older pupils being principally engaged in forgetting, with prodigious labor, everything they knew when they were younger. All are as polite, and as pale as ever, and among them, Mr. Feeder, B.A., with his bony hand and bristly head, is still hard at it, with his Herodotus stop on just at present, and his other barrels on a shelf behind him. A mighty sensation is created, even among these grave young gentlemen, by a visit from the emancipated Toots, who is regarded with a kind of awe, as one who has passed the Rubicon, and is pledged never to come back, and concerning the cut of whose clothes, and fashion of whose jewelry, whispers go about, behind hands, the bilious Bitherstone, who is not of Mr. Toots' time, affecting to despise the latter to the smaller boys, and saying he knows better, and that he should like to see him coming, that sort of thing in Bengal, where his mother had got an emerald belonging to him that was taken out of the footstool of a Rajah. Come now. Bewildering emotions are awakened also by the sight of Florence, with whom every young gentleman immediately falls in love, again. Except, as aforesaid, the bilious Bitherstone, who declines to do so, out of contradiction. Black jealousies of Mr. Toots arise, and Briggs is of opinion that he ain't so very old after all. But this disparaging insinuation is speedily made not by Mr. Toots saying aloud to Mr. Feeder, B.A., how are you, Feeder? Apostrophe and asking him to come and dine with him today at the Bedford. In right of which feats he might set up as old par, if he chose, unquestioned. There is much shaking of hands, and much bowing, and a great desire on the part of each young gentleman, to take Toots down in Miss Dombey's good graces, and then, Mr. Toots having bestowed a chuckle on his old desk, Florence and he withdraw with Mrs. Blimmer and Cornelia. And Dr. Blimmer is heard to observe behind them as he comes out last, and shuts the door, gentlemen, We will now resume our studies, apostrophe for that and little else is what the doctor hears the sea say, or has heard it say in all his life. Florence then steals away, and goes upstairs to the old bedroom with Mrs. Blimmer and Cornelia. Mr. Toots, who feels that neither he nor anybody else is wanted there, stands talking to the doctor at the study door, or rather hearing the doctor talk to him, and wondering how he ever thought the study a great sanctuary, and the doctor, with his round-turned legs, like a clerical pianoforte, an awful man. Florence soon comes down and takes leave. Mr. Toots takes leave, and Diogenes, who has been worrying the weak-eyed young man pitilessly all the time, shoots out at the door, and barks a glad defiance down the cliff, while Melia, and another of the doctor's female domestics, looks out of an upper window, laughing at that there Toots, apostrophe and saying of Miss Dombey, but really though, now ain't she like her brother, only prettier? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Toots, who saw when Florence came down, that there were tears upon her face, is desperately anxious and uneasy, and at first fears, that he did wrong in proposing the visit. But he is soon relieved by her saying she is very glad to have been there again, and by her talking quite cheerfully about it all, as they walked on by the sea. What with the voices there, and her sweet voice, when they come near Mr. Dombey's house, and Mr. Toots must leave her, he is so enslaved, that he has not a scrap of free will left. When she gives him her hand at parting, he cannot let it go. Miss Dombey, I beg your pardon, apostrophe says Mr. Toots, in a sad fluster, but if you would allow me to, the smiling and unconscious look of Florence brings him to a dead stop. If you would allow me to, if you would not consider it a liberty, Miss Dombey, if I was to without any encouragement at all, if I was to hope, you know, apostrophe says Mr. Toots. Florence looks at him inquiringly. Miss Dombey, apostrophe says Mr. Toots, who feels that he is in for it now, I really am in that state of adoration of you, that I don't know what to do with myself. I am the most deplorable wretch. If it wasn't at the corner of the square at present, I should go down on my knees, and beg and entreat of you, without any encouragement at all, just to let me hope, that I may think it possible that you, oh, if you please, don't. Apostrophe apostrophe cries Florence, for the moment quite alarmed and distressed. Oh, pray don't, Mr. Toots. Stop, if you please. Don't say any more. As a kindness and a favor to me, don't. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots is dreadfully abashed, and his mouth opens. You have been so good to me, apostrophe says Florence, I am so grateful to you, I have such reason to like you for being a kind friend to me, and I do like you so much. Apostrophe and here the ingenuous face smiles upon him with the pleasantest look of honesty in the world, that I am sure you are only going to say goodbye. Apostrophe apostrophe, certainly, Miss Dombey, apostrophe says Mr. Toots, aye, that's exactly what I mean. It's of no consequence. Apostrophe, goodbye. Apostrophe apostrophe cries Florence. Goodbye, Miss Dombey. Apostrophe apostrophe stammers Mr. Toots. I hope you won't think anything about it. It's of no consequence. Thank you. It's not of the least consequence in the world. Apostrophe, poor Mr. Toots goes home to his hotel in a state of desperation, locks himself into his bedroom, flings himself upon his bed, and lies there for a long time, as if it were of the greatest consequence, nevertheless. But Mr. Feeder, B. A. is coming to dinner, which happens well for Mr. Toots, or there is no knowing when he might get up again. Mr. Toots is obliged to get up to receive him, and to give him hospitable entertainment. And the generous influence of that social virtue, hospitality, to make no mention of wine and good cheer, opens Mr. Toots' heart, and warms him to conversation. He does not tell Mr. Feeder, B. A. what passed at the corner of the square, but when Mr. Feeder asks him, when it is to come off, apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Toots replies, that there are certain subjects which brings Mr. Feeder down a peg or two immediately. Mr. Toots adds that he don't know what right Limmer had to notice his being in Miss Dombey's company, and that if he thought he meant impudence by it, he'd have him out, doctor or no doctor, but he supposes it's only his ignorance. Mr. Feeder says he has no doubt of it. Mr. Feeder, however, as an intimate friend, is not excluded from the subject. Mr. Toots merely requires that it should be mentioned mysteriously and with feeling. After a few glasses of wine, he gives Miss Dombey's health, observing, "Feeder, you have no idea of the sentiments with which I propose that toast." Mr. Feeder replies, "Oh, yes, I have, my dear Toots, and greatly they redound to your honor, old boy." Mr. Feeder is then agitated by friendship, and shakes hands, and says, if ever Toots wants a brother, he knows where to find him, either by post or parcel. Mr. Feeder likewise says, that if he may advise, he would recommend Mr. Toots to learn the guitar, or, at least the flute, for women like music, when you are paying your addresses to them, and he has found the advantage of it himself. This brings Mr. Feeder, B.A., to the confession, that he has his eye upon Cornelia Blimmer. He informs Mr. Toots that he don't object to spectacles, and that if the doctor were to do the handsome thing and give up the business, why, there they are provided for. He says it's his opinion that when a man has made a handsome sum by his business, he is bound to give it up, and that Cornelia would be an assistance in it which any man might be proud of. Mr. Toots replies by launching wildly out into Miss Dombey's praises, and by insinuations, that sometimes he thinks he should like to blow his brains out. Mr. Feeder strongly urges that it would be a rash attempt, and shows him, as a reconcilement to existence, Cornelia's portrait, spectacles and all. Thus these quiet spirits pass the evening, and when it has yielded place to night, Mr. Toots walks home with Mr. Feeder, and parts with him at Dr. Blimmer's door. But Mr. Feeder only goes up the steps, and when Mr. Toots is gone, comes down again, to stroll upon the beach alone, and think about his prospects. Mr. Feeder plainly hears the waves informing him, as he loiters along, that Dr. Blimmer will give up the business, and he feels a soft romantic pleasure in looking at the outside of the house, and thinking that the doctor will first paint it, and put it into thorough repair. Mr. Toots is likewise roaming up and down, outside the casket that contains his jewel, and in a deplorable condition of mind, and not unsuspected by the police, gazes at a window, where he sees a light, and which he has no doubt is Florence's. But it is not, for that is Mrs. Skewton's room, and while Florence, sleeping in another chamber, dreams lovingly, in the midst of the old scenes, and their old associations live again, the figure which in grim reality is substituted for the patient boys on the same theater, once more too connected but how differently, with decay and death, is stretched there, wakeful and complaining. Ugly and haggard it lies upon its bed of unrest, and by it, in the terror of her unimpassioned loveliness for it as terror in the sufferer's failing eyes it seeth. What do the waves say, in the stillness of the night, to them? Edith, what is that stone arm raised to strike me? Don't you see? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.